Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello, and once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs, my doctor. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist, has been director of retinal services at Ophthalmology Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. Dr. Sachs earned his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. He completed a fellowship in vitreoretinal diseases at Mount Sinai and Beth Israel Hospitals in New York. He's board certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology and is a member of the several professional societies, including the New York Ophthalmological Society and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Bobby Sachs, thanks so much for being here.
Alan, thank you very much for having me.
To be part of today's conversation, and by the way, a lot of phones are already ringing, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Hey, Bob, do you think I can start just by taking the calls?
Absolutely, Alan. Go right ahead.
Okay, here we go. Let's go to Linda in Albany. Linda.
Yes.
You're on.
Okay. Cataracts run in my family. My great-grandmother went blind because of them. They were afraid to operate on her because she was in her 90s. That was in the 1950s. And when one of her daughters got them later on in her life, even though she was in her 90s, they operated on her, and it took very well. My ophthalmologist tells me that I am just starting to get them. And I was wondering, first of all, how much of a job it is to work on cataracts these days, how easy it is is it a big deal for such an operation? And the other thing is, how do somebody like me know when it reaches the point where I should be saying, are we ready for an operation?
Good questions all. Let me start by defining what a cataract is for our listeners. The eye is like a camera, and there's an internal lens within the eye called the lens, and it is a disc of protein, and it starts off in life being transparent like a piece of saran wrap, and as time goes on, it starts to opacify. The proteins within that lens start to change, and the lens goes from being clear like a piece of saran wrap to a piece of wax paper, opaque. Another description might be a dirty window, a window going from crystal clear, having just been cleaned, to one that's now got streaks and little blobs and a haze on it. So any of those analogies can work. The point is that at some point it starts to interfere with your vision, and people may notice that they have more trouble night driving, a lot of glare. They might notice that they have trouble reading. TV becomes an issue. Anything that throws light might cause reflections within the lens and cause some distraction. So at some point it starts to bother. Now, I'll tell you that everybody gets cataracts. The lens changes in everybody, in some people earlier than others.
Even eye doctors?
Even eye doctors.
Yeah, okay.
We get a special type. The point being that everybody gets them, and at some point, if it becomes symptomatic enough, cataract surgery is indicated. We do a lot of cataract surgery. It's probably the most commonly done surgery in the Medicare population. And the type of surgery has become very, very efficient, very effective, and has changed markedly over the past number of years. Improvements have been spectacular. The surgery now in our hands at some of the specialty surgical centers, the one in the area that we maintain, the surgery itself actually takes only a few minutes. It's done with a small incision in the wall of the eye that is so finely crafted and so small that it seals itself after the surgery. There's no need for any suturing. Through that opening, fine instruments are introduced in the eye, and that lens that I described to you is removed in almost its entirety, leaving behind just a little thin membrane that supports the implant lens that will be put in the eye. The means of removing the lens is with ultrasound that helps to break up the lens into small pieces and remove it through this opening. We also have lasers that we can use to help assist in cataract surgery, depending on the type of cataract you might have. But all this takes only a few minutes to do. After the cataract is removed and that little membrane is maintained, an implant lens is placed in the eye. And here's where a lot of improvement has been had over the past few years. These lenses now are, we have multifocal lenses, meaning that an implant lens can give you both distance and reading vision without the need for glasses. A lot of people are free of glasses after cataract surgery. There are other qualities of those lenses that can be done that can remove astigmatism. The point is that the measurements prior to the surgery are what determine what kind of lens is best for you, and then the options are presented by your ophthalmologist. The surgery itself, we don't, you know, you said, is it a big deal? For us, it's a big deal. We have to make sure that all the measurements are properly done and that things are done just precisely. But we do this, and we do this regularly. And so I don't want you to be afraid of it. In fact, it's a very liberating surgery for you in the sense that people who come in with limited vision or decreased vision and are having trouble doing things and maybe have given up certain things, like they don't drive at night anymore or they don't read much, this kind of thing is reversed. And suddenly the world, the colors are bright and vision is vastly improved. So please don't be afraid. And, you know, your ophthalmologist will help you determine based on your needs and on the type of cataract that you have, because not every cataract is the same. There are different ways of measuring them. But that's up to you and your ophthalmologist.
Thanks, Linda.
What's the recovery time usually from that?
Minutes. I mean, literally,
yeah.
You get the
you
surgery.
You walk out.
You walk out. You know, you go to the surgery center, for example, or to the hospital outpatient department, and you walk out a couple hours later. You use eye drops for 3 to 4 weeks afterwards on a decreasing course. But as far as, you know, using the eye, you're seeing within just a few minutes to an hour or two afterwards, things are starting to clear up.
Very encouraging. Thank you very much.
Do you wear corrective lenses on your license? Does it say you have to wear corrective lenses?
No, I just have reading glasses now.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Good luck.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, here we go.
Vitamin, mineral, and amino acid supplements such as lutein and taurine have much effect on the retina?
Yes, they do. I'm a big believer in nutrition. The eye, just to give you a little short course here, the eye has a very, very rapid and very specific metabolism. It and the brain have the fastest metabolism in the body as far as the turnover of precursors to making to maintaining the health of the structures of the eye or the brain. The eye has one of the fastest blood flow for its size of any part of the body, so it has a very rapid metabolism. You know, think about that. Your eye is constantly seeing things. Even when you're sleeping, it still detects light and form and movement. And when you're up and moving around, think about what it does. It can see fast movement. It can detect light at a very small amount of light in the dark. It can filter out very bright light. And you know, think about that. So the point is, the eye has a very rapid metabolism that does need to maintain itself with certain building blocks that must be a part of it. And I'm a big believer in nutrition as a way of making sure that the retina, which is the most metabolically active part of the eye, that is well maintained.
Okay, so can you be specific about what nutritionally? B12, vitamin E?
Well, you know, most vitamins in general. I'm a big believer also in omega-3 fatty acids, which are derived from fish oil. You have to be careful about what kind of fish oil or what kind of omega-3s you get, the form of it. There are triglyceride forms, which are well absorbed in the body and are utilized well by the eye. There are chemically altered forms that are also sold that don't get absorbed as well and don't work as well. So all forms are not equivalent. Vitamin D, I think, is also an important form, but the way I tell people this is that there's almost a recipe you can kind of think of vitamins, minerals, antioxidants. You mentioned lutein as a carotenoid, and it's and a couple of its cousins, very important in the maintenance of good macular health. Macula being the part of the retina that is most accurately sees, and I tell people, that formula for you may very well be the same as for another person, but it's like a recipe. You want to make sure that you have a certain amount of certain things in balance so that you don't take too much of one thing, not enough of another. And your ophthalmologist should be able to help you with that.
Thanks, Dr. Sachs. Okay, and we are going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital, announcing the completion of its new construction and renovation project, featuring a new intensive care and surgical pavilion with 10 new operating suites. SaratogaHospital.org. Nine Pin Cider, serving New York hard ciders, made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Saturday at 929 Broadway in downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple, ninepincider.com. The Urological Institute, offering urologic oncology services with prostate specialists using active monitoring protocols designed to help avoid or postpone cancer treatments through imaging and genomic testing, urologyoncology.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. And from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com.
And we are back with the amazing Dr. Robert Sachs, and you have been hearing him today giving very good answers. I'm just very appreciative that he's taking all of this time. He's very much in demand. Okay, let's go to George in Middle Grove. Okay, George, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan and Dr. Sachs. I have macular degeneration in one eye with a vision less than 2200, close to 2200, and the other eye is 20/20. And my question is, how would you understand it being just in one eye? And what, in your experience, is the prognosis of this and its relationship to the prognosis in the good eye?
I'm sorry to hear of your difficulties. Macular degeneration is on a spectrum from what we call the dry form to the wet form. I would be quite surprised if you didn't have something to be observed in the good eye, despite 20/20 vision, some early changes. But what may have happened in the left eye was you accelerated to a more damaging form, which is not uncommon. It comes to our attention when someone comes in and says, gee, one eye doesn't work well, but the other eye is fine, and we see that they did have some exacerbation of their macular degeneration in the weak eye, but even the good eye needs to be looked at and monitored and helped possibly with some nutritional supplementation to help limit its deterioration. So just make sure that you're being seen by an ophthalmologist, hopefully someone who's got some retinal experience, if not a retina specialist exactly, who can follow you for that to make sure that you don't have any progression of the good eye and try to maintain things where they are.
And Bobby, what is macular degeneration?
The macula, as I mentioned a moment ago,
It's the
bullseye in the target. If you think of the back of the eye, the retina, as the film in the camera, back to the camera analogy, you think of the macula as the center of that bullseye. That's the most accurate spot where vision is most accurate. That's where you read with, determine color with. It's critical. And it's a tiny area, maybe the size of the head of a pin in reality.
Really?
So it's tiny, yet terribly important. And that macular area degenerates. It breaks down the layers that of nutritional support, and the blood vessels to that start to deteriorate. That is macular degeneration.
George, thank you very much. Okay, we'll go to Mark in West Hurley. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Hello, Dr. Sachs and Alan.
Yep.
My wife suffers from polymyalgia rheumatica, which she's fearful of it's morphing into giant cell arteritis, which has something to do with vision. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. Giant cell arteritis is named after the type of cells that are seen on pathologic examination of some of the blood vessels. These so-called giant cells are the hallmark. It's an inflammatory disease, and PMR that your wife has is an inflammatory disease, and some people who have that can develop a problem where they develop basically closure of blood vessels, arteries to the eye, causing blindness, or in the heart causing heart attack, or to the brain causing stroke. So these things have to be monitored and maintained. And the sedimentation rate of the blood, I'm sure you're familiar with that term, that has to be monitored carefully by her physician. But having PMR does not determine that she's going to get giant cell arteritis, but she needs to be monitored.
Well, she's having a ultrasound of her temporal artery shortly, and doctor, her rheumatologist said most likely it's not, but can this giant cell arthritis be treated if it is that?
Yes, as an inflammatory disease, it is treatable by using steroids, and there are pluses and minuses, of course, of steroid use. But if you have an episode of giant cell arteritis or temporal arteritis, steroids are usually indicated under the care of your rheumatologist, and the sedimentation rate is followed as it hopefully falls under the influence of the steroids, and the danger zone is passed.
Mark, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. One free phone right now. And Ed to Wilbraham. Okay, Ed, you're on.
Hello, doctors.
Good afternoon.
I have a question regarding, I had a tear in my retina, and it was repaired by cryopexy. And I was wondering if you can tell me by how much does that increase the chances of developing a cataract?
Well, the cryopexy, it wasn't laser. It was done with a cryo?
Correct.
Okay, that uses a probe that is circulates a liquid gas through it, so it's very, very cold and causes the wall of the eye to scar down and seal off this tear that you had. We often use laser for that, but sometimes the tear is in such a position or such a morphology that the cryo is more effective. In and of itself, it shouldn't cause much in the line of cataract development, but sometimes a local inflammation is set up that will later on cause the cataract to grow. But as I mentioned earlier, cataract surgery is very effective, very efficient, and even having had the cryopexy should not influence the ability to have cataract surgery if that's also your concern. So, whatever needed to be done to support the wall of the retina was apparently done and done properly. And if the cataract develops later on, it'll be dealt with also in its own way.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Yeah, bye. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Greg in Kingston. Okay, Greg, you're on.
Hi, yes. My question concerns bleeding of the eye. I'm a diabetic, but I also had some surgery a long time ago. And after the surgery, I had eye bleeding. And when it took 5 months to clear up, I had a transplant and vitrectomy, and because it was so bad, when they did finish doing that, they couldn't find anything that caused the bleeding. Later on, I had an opportunity to take naproxen again, which I had during the operation, and I found out I was able to turn my bleeding on and off whether I took the naproxen. And then more recently, I've been on the preventive aspirin. Everybody puts you on the baby aspirin. And I've had unexplained bleeding that they couldn't find causes for. And I finally stopped that, and all the bleeding in the eye seems to have stopped. Do you know anything about the NSAID relationship and bleeding in the eye?
Well, yes. NSAIDs are known in some instances of excess use, or in your case where you might be extremely sensitive to the use, to cause bleeding, for example, in the GI tract, not at all unusual. If this is something that's of concern, I think your internist might have some ways of checking things, or even asking you to see a hematologist to have evaluation done to see why you're having abnormal bleeding. Diabetics, however, do have propensity to bleed in the eye because over time the diabetes weakens the blood vessels in the retina and causes them to be very sensitive and more likely to bleed. So the fact that you had a vitrectomy, which is a surgical procedure to remove the gel that fills the back compartment of the eye, normally it's a clear fluid, but when you have bleeding in it, it becomes very cloudy, obviously, and you can't see, and the vitreous needs to be removed in some instances to restore vision. But diabetes itself is a risk factor for bleeding, so this all has to be puzzled out between your various physicians.
Can the bleeding also affect the drainage channels for the viscous fluid in the eye?
Not for the viscous fluid. I think you're speaking about the aqueous fluid, which is a glaucoma issue when that... when that fluid does not, when the eye doesn't handle that fluid appropriately, and pressure builds up, causing pressure on the nerves in the eye, and therefore glaucoma. These things can all be interrelated, obviously. So again, your ophthalmologist must look at all these different factors.
And it could also then affect an implant that was put in afterwards. For the glaucoma?
Yeah, well, it depends on which kind of implant, but those are usually designed to help relieve pressure in the eye, to give another channel for fluid to escape from the eye and to maintain a pressure that that the eye can exist well with internally.
It should be a Bayer valve.
Hmm?
A Bayer valve implant, you know.
A Bayer valve, yes. That's one of the different types of drainage ports that goes that allows fluid out of the eye through an external means, essentially, and that helps to monitor and mollify any pressure rises in the eye to make sure that glaucoma is controlled.
Greg from Kingston, we're going to have to let you go. A lot of people behind
okay.
you. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now.
We'll go to... Harriet from Fleischmann's. Are you there, Harriet?
I am. Thank you, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I have a retinal pucker in one eye, and I will be having surgery in the spring. And I asked the doctor, once he corrects that, will I have 20/20 again? And he couldn't give me, or wouldn't give me, a definite answer. And I'm wondering why I might not.
Well, the macular pucker, I described the macula before as that central zone of the retina where you see most accurately. It is made up of many layers of cells and various support layers. And the top support layer is called the internal limiting membrane and sometimes becomes a little thickened and starts to wrinkle. Or pucker, and that's where the term macular pucker comes in. It causes some distortion of that central foveal area, the central macular area called the fovea, which is really the absolute pinpoint center of the macula. And that's where you get 20/20 vision. So if this macular pucker is causing that small area to be distorted, there's good reason to remove that. There's a very careful and very precise operation that literally peels that membrane off. But you assume afterwards, you know, you have to think, will the retinal tissue that has been puckered and therefore distorted, will it resume its normal shape? Will it settle back and smooth out again as you would like it to? And there's no way to really know. So if there is enough of a pucker there that you're being impinged, your vision's being impeded by that, then having the surgery is certainly in order to prevent further damage and hopefully to allow the retina to relax back and for the vision to return as close to 20/20 as possible.
And do you do that surgery, Bob?
We do it through our office, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Harriet, thanks for the great call.
Thank you so much for explaining that so well.
Thank you. Boy, he is good, isn't he? Okay, let's go to Robert in Valencia. Okay, Robert, you're on.
Is this the Robert you're referring to?
Yeah, I hope so. Are you in Valencia?
I'm in Valencia.
Yeah, that's what I said. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Dr. Sachs I'm talking to, I presume?
Yes, sir.
That's the one.
I have a condition called AION, anterior ischemic optical neuropathy.
Correct.
What happens with this condition for the benefits of the audience is that suddenly you have lost part of your vision. In my case, the central vision in my left eye, which generally doesn't seem too awful. I mean, if both of my eyes are open, I could even know that I don't have not even know that I have this.
Right, one eye covers for the other. Yeah, the visual field is
yeah.
completed. Yeah,
I mean, even with my left eye, I have good vision peripherally, but it's very difficult to read or because it's close to the center, so
right.
it's hard to focus on anything.
Right.
If I would, you know, cover over my right eye, it's difficult. So if I should get this in both eyes, it would be disaster.
It would be.
I would functionally blind, I think.
Not common that it would happen in both eyes. And just to describe what this
sorry,
is.
Sorry, what did you say?
It's not common to occur in both eyes, but it can.
Okay. But it does happen, I've been told.
Oh, yes. Yes, small percentage, but it can.
Now, my condition, my question.
Whoa, Robert, if you can, let's let Dr. Sachs just go on with a little bit more of an explanation.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, just to explain to our listening audience, the optic nerve is that cable that carries all the individual nerve fibers from the eye to the brain and carries all the information. And optic neuropathy, which is what you have, can occur. In this case, it's what we call an ischemic optic neuropathy, which is a loss of oxygen to part of that nerve and damage to the nerve. In a sense, in kind of a loose way, it's almost a stroke to the nerve that carries the information from the eye to the brain. And because that the individual nerve fibers within the optic nerve cable are very carefully arranged, you can lose certain parts of your visual field in the eye that's affected. It's you know, risk factors for it include things like diabetes and hypertension and high cholesterol, all things that I'm sure that they've investigated and looked at. There are other less common things that I'm sure have been investigated as well. But we don't know a lot about what sets these things off. And the problem is that once occurred, it's the return of function can be very variable and often incomplete.
Yeah, right. So my condition has gotten slightly better from its inception, but now it looks pretty stable, and it looks like I'm going to have it, you know, forever.
You probably will have some deficit, but of course, you know, make sure that you monitor these other factors that could have led to this. Good diet. Make sure your nutrition is well controlled.
Right.
Thank you very much, Robert.
I didn't even get to my question.
Okay. Ask your question.
I was going to ask a question.
Go ahead.
My question concerns the fact that I have been, it has been suggested to me to take a baby aspirin a day because they postulate that what caused this condition was a sudden drop in blood pressure, which is normal for, I would hold anybody, this can happen to anybody, but the sudden drop in blood pressure caused a lack of blood flow, and therefore, as you say, a lack of oxygen supply, so and so forth.
So what's the question, Bob, Robert?
Well, the question is, what caused this condition is that I have a risk factor called small cups.
Okay, so you have your
optic
nerve is...
If you have this risk factor, it's much more likely that this is going to happen.
It can be, and that's an anatomic feature that you can't do anything about.
The question is... Why don't ophthalmologists, when they evaluate the fact that you have these small cups, immediately recommend you take a baby aspirin just to be sure? You know, they don't really know anything about this, I know, but it's still, that's the best judgment at the moment.
Okay, Robert, that's the question. We're getting an answer. There are five people behind you. Go ahead.
Small cups in an optic nerve are more common, and the number of people who actually end up with NAON is a small percentage. There are things that can be mentioned, but you have to be careful about making too many determinations based on that structural change in the eye. Or it's a variant of normal in most cases, so it's difficult to tell somebody to do something. The other point is that if you take blood pressure medication, make sure you take it. Don't take it before you go to bed. Take it in the morning rather than the evening if it's possible.
Oh, yeah, I don't have to do that, fortunately.
Okay.
Hey, Robert, so sorry we can't take any more because we have to go to the next person. Thanks for calling. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Goodbye. Thank you. Okay. All right. That's good. So now we'll go to Susan in Woodstock. Go, Susan.
Yes. Good afternoon. I have a lamellar hole in my left eye. I've had it for about 10 years, and it's just being monitored. Is there anything that can be done to get me my vision back?
Well, here's what it is. Remember I discussed a few minutes ago about macular pucker. You've got that layer, that thin covering layer over the retina. And sometimes it puckers or pulls enough that it can actually pull a little hole in the center of the retina. If it's a full thickness hole, you do lose most of your vision. But people can have a partial thickness, and by that I mean there's many layers of the retina, And so maybe the top few layers or the top one or two layers actually gets disrupted by this. And that's what you have. Lamellar just means layered hole.
Right.
It can often be very stable. If it looks like it is showing signs of increased change, and you can, and we have ways of monitoring that, the same surgery that the woman earlier who's having the macular pucker surgery, that might be indicated. Sometimes the you remove that that membrane and allow the hole to kind of fill in naturally. It depends on your particular instance, and so this is something that you should be discussing with your retinal surgeon, who can probably show you some images of the hole and how it's developed over time.
Susan, thank you. Okay, so we have to take a break now, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh, offering accredited bachelor's and master's degree programs in education with dual certification in special education, msmc.edu. Ellis Medicine, providing options, support, and help for surgical weight loss at the Ellis Bariatric Care Center in Schenectady, ellismedicine.org. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books and holiday gift ideas, with a second shop on Windmere Avenue in the heart of Greenwood Lake, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Washington County Tourism and the towns and villages therein, featuring art venues, holiday happenings, farmers markets, craft beverage, and specialty shops for holiday gift giving, washingtonnycounty.com. And from Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com.
And we are back with the wonderful Dr. Robert Sachs, who, as you hear, has a capacity for explaining things unlike anybody I've ever heard. Let's go to Jane in Sullivan County. Jane, you're on. Jane. Hello,
yes?
Jane. Oh, yes, it's me, Alan, waiting for you to ask your question.
I'm sorry. I guess I must have lost you. I was just at the eye doctor, and he had said something that I had curly veins in my left eye, and she would like me to go in for a visual field test. So first, I'd like to know if that's, you know, somewhat serious and what the visual field test would produce.
Well, I think he's probably looking at the pattern of the retinal vasculature, the blood vessels in the retina, which follow a fairly regular pattern. But sometimes people could have some of the vessels a little bit more tortuous, a little more curly, as you might say. And in relationship to the way the optic nerve looks, he may want to get a visual field test. What you have is a variant that may be a variant of normal, and an abundance of caution, he's just going to check to make sure the visual field is okay.
What is that, a visual field?
Visual field test is a test where you put your chin in a machine.
Oh, yeah.
They cover over one eye with the good eye. With the uncovered eye, you look at a dot, and then the machine projects light dots of various intensities throughout a dome that where your head is in. And whenever you see a dot, you press a button, and it maps out your visual field, your peripheral visual field. And it shows us problems with optic nerve function in glaucoma or in, as the gentleman had with the optic neuropathy, it'll map out any losses or any areas of weakness so that those can be addressed and hopefully rectified.
So Jane should go, right?
Absolutely. No question about
okay,
it. The
Jane.
Test is painless and
right.
Quick.
You've got your orders.
Thank you.
Do it.
Thanks.
Right.
Bye.
Okay, let's go to Nancy and Ravina. Nancy and Ravina, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I hope you have an answer that's good. I had a very serious reaction to a drug that I was given in October for peripheral neuropathy. And all of a sudden, I started having strange symptoms, and my doctor wasn't forthcoming. So I looked in the PDR, and it said, number one contraindication, do not give this drug if anyone is on opioids, which I am on for a serious something else. My vision went down so bad that I cannot read newspaper. I took myself off of it because he wouldn't. And I got the drug company, Pfizer. They sent me all kinds of information. But what I'm wondering is, I stopped it, titered myself down, but I can hardly read newsprint at all. And I've been off the drugs since October 9th. Is there no chance that my vision will, and my hearing as well, is there any chance that those things will come back?
Well, both these need to be evaluated. I wish I can't tell because, you know, you're at home and I'm in the studio, but this is something that you should bring up with your internist, have a referral to an ophthalmologist made, and find out why it is you're having difficulty seeing. It may have accelerated a natural process. It may have nothing to do with the medication itself.
Oh, no. I did contact an ophthalmologist, and Pfizer sent, then the FDA sent me all kinds of stuff that I have to fill out, but they could not tell me. They said, I don't know if it's going to come back or not. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I'm 84.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a chance that some of it would come back?
Well, again, I can't tell you about your specific situation. I would like to think that it's possible. What was the medication that you used that was...
It was Lyrica, and I was taking oxycodone for a hip fracture that I've had for quite a while.
Right.
And it said Lyrica, no congestive heart failure and no opioids. And I had both of them, and he wouldn't take me off, so I just stopped. And Pfizer said, you know, that's what it is. Very definitely, you have every sign and symptom.
Yeah.
But they didn't say anything about...
Nancy, I think we've been over that, and there are a lot of people behind you. I just want to...
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead, Bob.
What I'd like you to do is make sure you contact your physician about this. It's always dangerous to stop or start medications without the physician's understanding of what it is that you're doing. I'm sure that they want to make sure that you're taken care of as well as possible. So I would start there and make sure that your doctor knows what medications you are taking and that, you know, like I say you've seen an ophthalmologist, so hopefully they can have some answers for you.
Thank you, Nancy.
An ophthalmologist?
Yes, an eye physician,
okay.
A medical doctor, yes.
Yes, right. Okay, thank you, Nancy.
Much. Bye-bye.
Good luck to you.
And now Nancy from Ulster Park. Nancy from Ulster Park, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was recently told that I have a developing cataract in my right eye, which is causing me to also develop narrow-angle glaucoma.
That's possible.
In the same eye. Can you explain that relationship, please?
Sure. As I mentioned about what a cataract is, it's a disc of protein. And as it changes, it doesn't just change in its transparency, becoming from transparent to opaque. It also enlarges. It also becomes thicker. And if you have a natural narrowing of this angle, which is the where we describe where the fluid that's produced in the eye naturally works its way out of the eye. The angle is actually between the cornea, which is the clear surface of the eye, and the iris, which is where the pupil is. There's an angle there, and in that little corner, all the way around the inside of the eye, is a drainage port. And that drainage port needs to stay open so the fluid can work its way through there and out in a natural fashion. What happens in some people as they develop cataracts is the cataract gets thicker, pushes on the iris, pushes it forward, and helps to close that angle where if it becomes too narrow, the angle can actually close completely. The drainage port becomes totally blocked. The fluid can't get out of the eye but continues to be produced in the eye. The pressure in the eye rises precipitously, and you develop a form of glaucoma that is rapid and quite damaging.
And is glaucoma defined as higher pressure?
No. Glaucoma is a disturbance, a weakness of the optic nerve that I also described earlier.
Right.
And it is affected by pressure. So when the pressure in the eye goes up, it pushes on that optic nerve, changing its blood flow characteristics, but also weakening the nerve and leading to permanent damage, which is glaucoma.
Nancy, thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to Pat in Amsterdam. Pat, you're on.
Good afternoon, doctor and doctor. Great show so far. 25 years ago, my daughter was born with a cataract in her right eye. At the time, the doctor stated that doing anything to it would cause the same problems that it was causing, myopia, what have you. And we tried the patching and all that through her youth, and they said if nothing was done and whatever vision she had by the time she reached 8 or 10 years old, that's what she would have for the rest of her life, being that the brain would not learn new tricks, if you will, as she grew older, if anything was done after that. I was wondering if there was any advancements in medicine, or if these statements were true, or if there was anything at this stage in her life, being 25 years old, that could be done. And if not, she still has the cataract, if that right. would lead to other issues such as glaucoma that you were just talking about to the previous caller.
Well, I'm hoping that the vision in her other eye is good and she's been doing well for her 25 years. But for the eye, very good. What happens is some children are born with cataracts, and if there's other structural changes in the eye, which sounds like there may have been, it's wise to do what they suggested. What they've told you seems accurate. What the cataract does do, of course, is it looks like it blocks the blocks the light from getting in. But after 25 years, removal of that cataract would not let her, the other structures in the eye, see better necessarily because, as they mentioned to you, the nerve pathways that connect the eye to the brain were not properly laid down because they didn't see at the critical time in her when she was an infant and small child. So the cataract at this point may be a cosmetic issue. It should be followed to make sure she doesn't develop something that causes her discomfort because of a narrow angle glaucoma episode or a glaucoma attack, as we would call it, can be quite painful. So these things need to be watched. But as far as rehabilitating vision in the eye, there's likely a very limited chance of any kind of improvement.
Now, I'm not a very good listener, Bob, but why couldn't they take it out when she was a baby?
There may have been other structural changes in the eye that prevented them from wanting to go ahead and do that without causing further damage. They may have recognized that the eye was not going to see well under any circumstances.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, let's go to Bob in Albany. Bob in Albany, you're on. Bob in Albany. Ooh. Bob in Albany, 1, 2, 3. Okay, you're gone. Okay, and we'll go to Cleveland. Okay, Cleveland.
Good day, doctors. Quickly, my mother has macular degeneration, developed at about 70 years old. I'm 45. What's the likelihood that I have to worry about something in the future?
Put another way, is it hereditary?
Yes, there is a component that is. It's hard to tell. There's probably multiple factors. But in people who are first-degree relatives of someone with significant macular degeneration, we suggest that routine eye exams be done towards looking for any changes that might be indicative of macular degeneration development. Also, again, back to nutrition, there are things that can be done that can help to slow down the process, and hopefully even in someone who's at risk for this kind of a condition.
Terrific. Thank you for your answer.
Thanks a lot. Let's see here. Let's go to Jennifer in Kingston. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi, doctor. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. My daughter, in her senior year of high school, right before college, developed iritis and scleritis, and it took a while for us to find what exactly what it was. We had to go to a lot of different people, and from scratches in the eye to conjunctivitis, it just took quite a long time. And she entered college and saw a doctor about 3 hours from us now. So she's now graduated. She's had some flare ups. They tried some different medications. We've been to almost every kind of, specialist in order to determine perhaps where, the autoimmune condition is coming from.
So that's what they determined it is. It's an autoimmune condition. Any other problems in her?
Well, she's always had a lot of. She's had digestive issues. She's had some joint problems. So we've really been to juvenile rheumatologists, adult rheumatologists, and really,
right.
her the specialist that she sees in Long Island Center for, you know, lots of different types of different tests. And
sure.
So now that she's graduated, she's here. We've approached a couple of ophthalmologists' offices to make appointments just to establish her. But the schedulers tell me that they send a lot of their iritis patients to Albany. And I'm just wondering, I feel like we may not find a, is it a specialty that is, I know a lot of people, specialize in the neck.
Right. Well, a lot of general ophthalmologists may feel uncomfortable dealing with complicated mm-hmm. inflammation in the eye, but there are some who do. Certain offices are, certainly well-equipped to be able to evaluate and treat. What they'd like to do, of course, is get her records and find out what tests have been done to find out if there's, what that is. There are some people who do have some autoimmune issues, joint
right.
issues, and as you mentioned, GI issues and eye issues. Itis in iritis is just inflammation, and iritis is inflammation in the of the front part of the eye, essentially. Scleritis is the white of the eye, and that can also become inflamed. Each part of the eye has a potential inflammation. The point being that find out why, and then just monitor. With if flare up occurs, you hit it hard and fast with usually steroid eye drops and suppress the inflammation.
She takes a course of oral steroids too.
Okay.
I mean, I guess the outburst.
They
rage very fast.
Yeah, they can. They can come on very quickly. So she, hopefully she has she can contact her doctor.
You're right. She's on
Celebrex,
I guess.
So, Jennifer, thank you very much for that interesting call. Appreciate it
a lot.
You're
very sweet. Thank you for listening. Okay.
Good luck now.
Okay. Let's go to Charlie in Kingston. Charlie in Kingston, make it fast because we got to get out of here. Go ahead.
Okay. So, just a brief history. I've been seeing an eye doctor since fourth grade. I used to go to a pediatric ophthalmologist. I had a lot of headaches when I was younger. I had very strange optic nerves is what the doctors love to say. They light up every time they take a look at the picture. Since then, my eyes have been fine. I have poor vision, but it's been compensated with corrective lenses, 20/200 in my right eye, 20/60/80 in my left eye. All things being the same, healthy, 46-year-old male, would you recommend radial keratotomy as a...
Well, first of all, nobody really does radial keratotomy anymore. There are other ways like LASIK and the various forms of refractive surgery that are much better. But in your particular case, you should see someone who can really look at all your problems and decide if that is a good tactic for you. Before, your eyes are already delicate, as you've stated. So be very careful about jumping into anything. But no, radial keratotomy is really not done anymore. It's a procedure that has been supplanted by others.
Thank you, Charlie. And let's go to the other Charlie really quickly. And Holyoke, you got half a minute at most. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, hi. I'm 71. I had cataract surgery a couple of years ago. And about a year ago, my eyes started not tracking the same, I believe. I've got double vision. I think maybe the muscles in one eye have weakened or something. And I'm wondering if there's anything that I can do to alleviate that.
Well, there are prism glasses that'll help. If that's the case, a good optometrist or ophthalmologist should be able to fit you with lenses that help keep your eyes straight. But if you're seeing double, look in your wallet. You'll be very pleased with what you see.
Thank you, Charlie. All right, we're out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. And underwriting support for the Vox Pop comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, proudly introducing the gastroenterology specialist of Litauer with Dr. Alvarez, Dr. Ramani, and Dr. Raymond. NLH.org. Thank you, Dr. Robert Sachs. You're amazing. I love it when you come on with us.
Thank you, Alan.
Every phone has been ringing all this time. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Paulette Ryder. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.